You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Free kick for Atleti. Good opportunity to give a shout to a blog, a US fan club of Atletico Madrid called Into the Calderon. Do some really good content for all followers of the Colchoneros. A decent base in the United States as well, following the action on ESPN Plus. Give them a follow at Into the Calderon.
Welcome back to Colchonero Chat, part of the Atletico Madrid Podcast Network on the Fans First Sports Network. I'm Jeremy Barron, and I'm joined today by my good friend Alan Dodson, and we're going to be talking about all things Atletico Madrid and Villarreal. Those two teams match up at the Metropolitano on Sunday night. Alan, how are you?
I'm good. A bit bemused. It's been a busy morning in Villarreal. We've parted ways with yet another coach, and I can't say I'm looking forward to Sunday's match with a great deal of confidence.
Well, I am for sure looking forward to our conversation, and I guess from the Atletico point of view, it does make Sunday's match even more interesting as to how the two teams are going to approach it. As you mentioned, Alan, shortly before we started recording, we got the news that Villarreal have indeed parted ways with head coach Pacheta, the second permanent manager of the season. He is gone after just 12 games. What was your reaction to the sacking? What went wrong with Pacheta? And tell us about who's going to be in charge on Sunday.
Well, I think to take those in hopefully that order, I think my reaction was, I think everybody knew he was a dead man walking. I don't think it was the appropriate job for him, frankly. I don't think he was a great fit, but I don't think the players played particularly well under him, and the Europa League match, the match against Maccabi Haifa in Cyprus. I mean, here we were playing a team that has really not practiced for a month because of the war, and you're playing in a ground neutral site with no fans, and we were losing 1-0 after 80 minutes, and we only won 2-1 because we had a couple of players who seemed to care, and frankly, the Israeli side was very tired. I mean, as you can imagine, when you haven't practiced or been able to work together for a month. So I don't think anything that came out of that changed in anybody's mind about Pacheta. Let's see. I think the real issue, though, is that there's clearly something more problematic behind the scenes. It's not just a situation where the team isn't playing well under one manager. I mean, Setien didn't get much out of this group either. And there are some bigger questions, I think, about what exactly is going on in the locker room and what exactly our transfer policy during the summer, what effect that's had on it. So the rumor is that Marcelino is going to be hired to come back and coach full time. But on the match on Sunday is going to be our sporting director in charge, Miguel Angel Tena, I can't remember if it's got a, and he's, I think he coached Rossing Ferrol in 2015. I mean, he has had some managerial experience, but he's not, you know, he's very definitely a caretaker for this game. And of course, we go on to an international break after it. And I think everybody's feeling in Villarreal is that we would have kept Pacheta in place probably on Sunday if we didn't have somebody already lined up. So,
yeah. And with Marcelino's spell at Marseille lasting all of what, seven games, he's now back in the market and available to return to Villarreal. It's interesting though, because if I recall, Alan, his previous stint in charge at La Cerámica did not end on particularly good terms with the president.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things about following a small Spanish club from thousands of miles away is you don't get the whole story, and it's never really come out. But I think that there did seem to be a rapprochement, though, when at the funeral for Senor Janeza, our longtime front office person, who basically was the guy who brought Senor Roig into the team. Marcelino was there, and there seemed to be some sort of rapport developed and that sort of bridged whatever there was. At the time, I guess there were two things that were mentioned, but I think the first one, which was that we were playing a meaningless match at the end of the season against Sporting Gijón. And Marcelino from Asturias. Yeah, I mean, that, I suppose, but that's not, that sort of thing happens all the time. And frankly, we weren't very motivated. I mean, there's no way we would have been. I think the bigger issue was the whole handling of Musacchio, and because he wanted to play we had this whole thing where he wanted to play elsewhere after years with us. He wanted to go to Milan, and Milan kept showing up and saying they wanted him, but not having money. And then apparently there was some, Marcelino basically said he wouldn't discipline Musacchio, but then he did, or something like that. So it, you know, ended up being kind of a very divisive dressing room thing, and that was really what led to it. But you know, no question, he's an excellent coach for several years. He kind of takes Emery's control freak in a different way, because Marcelino is all about. Emery would you know, focus on the opponents and understanding them totally and preparing a master plan for the game. Marcelino wants to game plan your life,
right?
You know, I mean, he really is a fitness, you know, wants to emphasize fitness, good eating habits, all that stuff. You really know you're going to get somebody who's going to micromanage a lot of things, but maybe that's what we need right now. I mean, I think the one of the things that's very noteworthy is that our players, many of them, are just not very fit. And I mean, I don't know how to put it any better than that. When you watch us play, and we're walking up the pitch. That doesn't really give you great confidence.
Well, and it's a prime reason, Alan, why Villarreal find themselves 13th in the table entering this game. Just 5 points from the drop, 3 wins from 12, won only twice in La Liga under Pacheta. So it will be fascinating to see if and when the Marcelino deal gets done. That was my first thought when Pacheta was dismissed this morning, is that, well, you know, Marcelino is available again. I guess that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, I think the fan base is going to be really upset if it is somebody else. But I think the fact that the firing was announced this morning probably indicates that something is happening with Marcelino, because no other names have been mentioned. So we'll see.
And you know, I also haven't thought of Matteo Masaccio in quite a while. He was a really good center back on his day.
He was. You know, he that injury that he got, though, against Barcelona, wasn't it? Really bad injury, ankle break or something. Yeah. He never really recovered from that well. But he was one of these. He was a player like Samu Chukwueze, who, you know, you felt he'd been with Villarreal forever, and then but he started when he was so young. And so he still had some years ahead of him, but I don't know if he's playing anywhere now. I think
he retired. Yeah, he last played at Lazio in 2021.
Yeah, he was a very good center back for us, because he worked pretty well with a lot of different players, and you could have somebody who was less mobile working with him. And of course he was, he was part of some very successful teams for us, you know, two Europa League semifinalist clubs. So that was, you know, he was a good player. I was thinking about the players who we still have who worked under Marcelino. Gerard Moreno did in the Segunda, and then let's see.
Parejo worked under him at Valencia.
Yes, and also Denis Suarez worked under him for Villarreal. So, you know, there are definitely some players that he knows. I just think the big issues for Villarreal so far this year have been, we were talking before you started about the coaching carousel at Villarreal has been, we've had a few coaches who lasted more than a couple of years, but only a few. Emery actually lasting a little more than two and into October of the third. And Marcelino, I think, was there 3 years, and Pellegrini for five. But everybody else, we've had these people who came in, they stabilized the club, but then during the summer, when they got to theoretically impose more of their desires on the team, then they never finished the next year. And I think we sort of, the seeds of this were, we saw with Setien, because he was a kind of a surprise hire out of nowhere. As he said, I was basically sitting back watching my cows.
He was on his farm. I remember that.
Yeah. And he was really surprised and came in. And to his credit, there were aspects of his football that were maddening, but it was fun to watch, as you remember from the last match of the season last year, the 2-2 draw with you guys, where, I mean, that was just an incredibly fun match to watch, because Setien was all about attack, 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 and we left ourselves open at the back and God knows what, but it was kind of entertaining. But then during the summer, it just didn't seem as though he was particularly engaged. The preseason was pretty much a disaster. It didn't
several
look
heavy
like
losses, yeah.
Yeah, and it just didn't look like it didn't look like there was any real plan, or that the team was really working hard to train and get in shape for the new season. And then once the season started, His results weren't very good. I think, and Pacheta, he's a nice guy. I think everybody that's met him, you know, likes him. I just think he may not be ready for that level of Primera expectation, but it was one of those hires that I guess if it worked, if you caught lightning in a bottle, you know, great. But clearly he didn't. And it didn't seem like – I can't think of anybody who was really playing better under him than under Setien. So
– yeah. And that's the big issue, is that there was no real discernible improvement.
Yeah. The other issue for us, though, is that I think this team is only going to go as far this season as Gerard and Sorloth can take us, because when we've won matches and we've won a couple that we probably didn't deserve to win against teams that are below us in the table, it's been, you know, 85 minutes of horribleness and then a great play from one of them to score. You know, it just hasn't been, there hasn't been a match in a while where you can watch it and say, oh yeah, we played really well. I mean, we just haven't. The midfield is, especially the pivot, is not, it's like everybody there has gotten old at the same time, and we haven't really replaced them. We've had injuries too, on the wings that haven't helped, but defensively we've been a nightmare. And I think it's astonishing to see how far we've fallen defensively since Emery, because, you know, under him, it's like we knew if we had a 1-0 lead, we were going to win. Mm-hmm. And we went through a period where we didn't allow a goal from a set piece for over a year, I think.
Yeah, it was bad a year.
I mean, that was pretty amazing. And since then, we've really struggled defensively. Again, Pau Torres being sold to Aston Villa, we didn't really reinforce the position. We're dealing with a goalkeeper, our young goalkeeper, who is, he's had some very good games and he's had some not so very good games.
As a 21-year-old goalkeeper is, as is expected of a goalkeeper.
That's right.
Age.
And so you really look at it and you think, boy, you know, the midfield is just, we're not controlling midfield. We're defensively not doing very well. And frankly, when you look at our talent at the center back position, it's like there's nobody that really stands out. So, you know, putting a 21-year-old goalkeeper in the position that he's been in, he's probably doing about, I would say he's actually doing better than expected overall. That doesn't mean he won't have a couple of bad games, but he's also had some very good ones. But you can't win that way consistently.
Yeah.
And when I look at the table, it's like I'm afraid I have to say we're about where we should be.
Well, because, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, because we don't have any, there hasn't been a real consistent game plan, and there hasn't been, there just hasn't been a lot of ability to control a match. And, you know, historically, that's what Villarreal has always done. You know, we dominate possession, we work, you know, we really do push up and try to make plays. And this group just hasn't, I think a lot of it is that the age in the midfield is really, I think, a telling factor. But also we're just getting exposed far too much at the back, where our defenders are retreating instead of making a play to win the ball back. They're in full retreat, And we just don't have the ability to make that quick turnover again that we used to.
So, I mean, you look at his midfield, Capu is 35, Parejo's going to be 35, Manu Chagueros is 32, Raul Albiol is still going strong at 38 years old in defense.
Well, he's still going, but he's not playing.
He's going.
Yeah, he's not playing as much as he used to. He can't.
Yeah,
and we just don't have that. We don't have anybody who's really able to win the ball back in midfield that well, and that's something that we've typically always had, whether it was Capu or Ibora or you know, going back to Bruno Soriano, you know, those sorts of midfielders who could basically stop a counterattack before it really got going. And it just seems like now we're far too open, and that doesn't help us when you don't have really great one-on-one defenders at the back.
Well, I'd say the good news, the silver lining for Villarreal on Sunday, Alan, is that Alexander Sorloth does love a goal against Atletico. It feels like he scores against us every time he plays, whether it's with Real Sociedad or now with Villarreal. So we will see if Atletico's defense can contain him.
He's actually been fun to watch because he's so unpredictable. It's like you see him, and sometimes he has the ball at his feet, and you think he's going to step on it. And then sometimes he will get the, like one of the matches recently, you know, he gets the ball, makes a little move, and then unleashes a world-class goal from outside the box. You just never know. I think it's interesting that he's the one player we sort of spent some money on this summer, and he's been very good. He is, of course, the kind of striker who can go missing in the match for a long time because he's not he needs some service, but he can score. Gerard is, I think, as long as he can stay healthy with all of his injury, his muscle pulls and things, but when he's healthy, he's great. And he's always been a player who works very well to set up another striker. So I think he and Sorloth are a good team that way. But yeah, you know, you got this Griezmann fellow. I hear he's pretty good. I mean, he was only the 21st best player in the world, I guess. Jeez. But you know, I kind of think you might have an advantage there with him.
I mean, certainly on paper, perhaps.
It's hard to say. I think the thing is, it's gonna be weird for the team because they're clearly, you know, whoever is coming in is going to take over and do things differently. Obviously, our caretaker manager is going to have like one day of training with the team, and that's about it. So I think it's going to be pretty much maybe a few players auditioning for bigger roles. It'll be interesting to see because there have been some players who have, I mean, Capu and Parejo have both been the two starting in the center of midfield, and I'm wondering if that might change. That's because I think playing the two of them together, at least as they've been physically this year, just isn't working.
Yeah, and so, I want to circle back and talk about some of the transfers that these two clubs made and how perhaps they're emblematic of where La Liga is financially at this point in time, and perhaps where it has been in recent years. But we can. I wanted to say this, is we can contrast Villarreal's instability on the touchline with Diego Simeone and Atletico. El Cholo getting a brand new contract yesterday, a 3-year renewal, taking him through the 2026-27 season. If fulfilled, he will have been on Atletico's touchline for 15 full seasons, which is just staggering, even to think about. And now it is possible, if not probable.
Yeah. Well, I have a trivia question for you. I looked this up because I was thinking about it. Yes. So I don't know if you remember, but do you remember the match before it was Manzano, right? The match that got him fired.
Yes. Yeah.
That was the loss to Albacete, mm-hmm. right, in the Copa del Rey. At the same time, the Real fired their coach, Juan Carlos Garrido, after we lost to Mirandes in that same Copa del Rey round. And we each hired a coach within about a day of each other. Simeone has been there, as you say, you know, if he fulfills his contract, it'll have been 15 years. How many times has Villarreal hired a coach since Simeone was hired at Atleti, do you think?
Oh, I love questions like this. I'm going to go with 10 coaches.
You're very close, and you might be technically right because the number is 11 going on 12, but we did hire the same guy twice.
Yeah, yep, that's right.
And if it's Marcelino coming back, then it will be 10 different coaches and 12 hires. So very good. But it does show, and Villarreal is not necessarily that much more unstable than a lot of other La Liga sides.
So I think at the number of coaches Valencia have hired, for example, in the region.
Yeah, but they keep counting Voro as the interim coach every time.
So. How many times has Voro taken over there? Like half a dozen times in the last like, 10 I think years? So.
Yeah, I think something like that. So, yeah, I think it's, you know, managerial instability is a thing in Spain. And so the fact that Simeone has been there as long as he has is really even more remarkable. And the other thing is it's not like, I mean, when he was hired, he obviously had some managerial experience, but nothing in Spain. And he hadn't exactly set the world alight in some of his previous work. So, you know, you look at it now and you're like, well, it's a match made in heaven or something. But at the time, how do you know?
And he wasn't even really the first choice to take over. He was available. And that's why they offered him the job. And it was only for 18 months. And now he's signed 7 contract renewals since 2013.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, he's going to be, I mean, when you think about Atleti, you know, you'll always think of him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just,
he is the club.
He is. Yeah, exactly. I think that for us, I don't expect us to get anything out of this match, I have to say, just because I think the whole – I don't know where the players' heads will be. I don't know what is going on behind the scenes. I hope we play well. I hope we try to make a good showing. But I would be very surprised if we could get anything out of this match, given – when it's happening.
And Atletico have also won 16 consecutive games at home.
Oh, well, you know, there is that there little point.
There is that.
I know. But so I think it's going to be, I was looking back, I think the series actually is very close. I think maybe Atleti have won one more match over the years than Villarreal, but it's very close, and the goals are very close too. Mm-hmm. And I was realizing that there have not been many blowouts. I think there have been a couple of 3-0 wins from, I think you guys have maybe had 2 and we maybe have 1, something like that. So it's generally been pretty tight. And when we think of Atleti, Villarreal, the last 6-7 years, it's always those sorts of really, you know, nerve-wracking 1-1, 2-2, 2-1 matches that could go either way.
Yeah, there have been 3 2-2s in the last 4 meetings.
Yes. And I think that's, if I'm going to hold out hope for something, I think it would be that, but I think it's going to be very difficult. Plus, you know, you got Cholo just signed a new contract. I mean, you know, that's going to be a positive thing for the team too. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be a tough match for us. I'll be interested to see what our lineup is, partly because I think that might tell us something about what's going on behind the scenes, because obviously our coach on Sunday is somebody who has the ear of the president. And so I'll be curious to see if anybody in particular is dropped or if anybody comes in to play.
Could it mean a start for Ben Brereton Diaz, Alan, who has made only a handful of appearances since coming over from Blackburn?
Yeah, maybe. I think it would be really interesting to start him. The thing about if it is Marcelino, if it's hired, Brereton Diaz is probably the kind of player who you would like because he runs, mm-hmm. right? He's running into spaces. And part of the problems that he's had with Villarreal so far is that we're not really playing that way. We're trying to play the ball to Sorloth and Gerard. We're not running forward with diagonal balls from midfield so much as we used to. We're kind of trying to play down the wings and then cross it to Sorloth or something like that. So I think Diaz, I think it would be really nice if he got a start. I think it would be interesting to see him. Ramon Tarats is a player who we had who we bought last year, mm-hmm. and he was reasonably good, but then he hasn't really seen much playing time this year, and there's been some grumbling about that. But we're also going to be limited by injuries because I think we're still without Juan Foyth, and we're still without Pedraza, and those are two big misses because those are two of our better, harder working defensive players. I mean, Foyth is a good one on one shut you down defender on the right as a right back, and so I think we'll see what happens. I'm really curious to see how the team is put together. Historically, we've always played a 4-4-2. That changed a little bit under Setien. We went to a 4-3-3, and Pacheta, I'm not quite sure what we were doing, but it kind of varied. Marcelino is a strict 4-4-2 guy.
Yep.
So if we line up in a 4-4-2 on Sunday, that might give us a little indication of what we're thinking.
Interesting.
Well, the only problem with that is that Sorloth and Gerard would probably work better in something a little different. But I think that, I think it can work, but it's going to need a lot of tinkering in midfield, I think, and getting the best out of players who Sorloth, Gerard, Alex Baena, who is kind of who's very passionate, sometimes too passionate on the pitch.
Yes, I was just going to say.
it's like, we should start running a pool on when he's going to get his yellow card, right? But he does really work hard, and he's got an excellent shot from outside the box.
He does.
And so those kind of things, I think he's a player that Marcelino could really use. It's just been very disappointing so far that we haven't gotten much out of Brereton Diaz. We haven't got much out of Santi Comesaña, who we signed from Rayo. And Denis Suarez has been injured but hasn't done much either. I mean, these were all guys that we picked up for free,
right?
Where their contracts were expiring. And maybe this is the thing time to mention that, I think one of the things we've seen is that between the financial fair play rules and even more, I think, the Spanish league's salary caps, I think they're really starting to pinch the teams like Villarreal now.
Yeah.
Senior Raj said, and I, you know, I think this is it's certainly true, is that when you're trying to, we have a 25,000 seat stadium, and we rarely sell it out. Maybe we get 20,000 on average, say. That's pretty, you're giving away a lot of gate money compared to Atleti, Barcelona, Real Madrid, even Betis, Sevilla, and our neighbors down the road in Valencia. I mean, they all have bigger grounds, and they all have a bigger fan base and more money coming in there. And you know, if you're trying to make up that money, it basically does mean you're going to be a selling club, and that's kind of been our story. Having said that, it's still surprising to me that we reinvested so little of what we got from our sales. So
€12.5 million worth of transfer spend over the summer, mm-hmm. compared to two players leaving for over $30 million in Nico Jackson and Pau Torres, Samu Chukwueze going to Milan. You got a good fee for Dia, who was not going to be of really any use to Villarreal, and Danjuma is, you know, more or less off the books.
Well, he's still on loan, though. We haven't.
Oh, he's still on loan. Jeez.
He's still on loan. We've got to. He's got to do well enough, or he's got to play enough and do well enough somewhere that we.
That you can actually get him off the books.
Yeah, yeah, but yeah, Dia is like. This is the thing that I think is troubling to a lot of us who have watched Villarreal for a long time, is that we've had some players that have come through that we look at later and say, wait, we could have really used that player. And Dia, I think, was one of those. You remember how Cedric Bakambu was under Marcelino, mm-hmm. right? I mean,
a star.
Star. And Dia, if we had been, he wasn't a great fit for us at the time because we were not playing that sort of counterattacking style. So we brought him in and then immediately, this isn't what we wanted. And it's a bit like Enes Unal, who, you will remember scoring against you guys.
I sure
but
do.
That was virtually one of the only things he did for us, because he was not the kind of, he didn't fit into the style of play that we had. But it was like at the time we thought, oh, we can get this guy and develop him and sell him back to Man City for whatever the term was, and it didn't happen because. He didn't really flourish in our system. And those sorts of things, I think, are, you can miss like that when you're a big club and you have money to spend. But for us, it's hard. I think we still feel it's like we've done a couple of those deals where this is a great chance to pick up this guy who just needs a change of scenery to flourish, or a great chance to pick up this guy who can be a star and we can develop him and sell him on for more money. And it hasn't always worked.
Yeah.
And I mean, it never always works. Yeah. It never always works, but you've got to sometimes say, you know, if you're a small club or smaller club, you have less ability to absorb the hits. And we've had a couple of hits, I think that really affected us. I think the reality is this season we need to rebuild confidence in ourselves. We need to rebuild the playing style. If we can do something in Europe, I think that would get the fan base pretty excited. But I think La Liga is going to be a tough one this year for us because we're too far back, I think, to really challenge it for the top five or six at this point.
Yeah, 8 points behind Betis in sixth, seven behind La Real, who are in seventh, at least for the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's really, I mean, I have to say, I don't think the league overall is necessarily as strong as it has been in some years, but I think Girona and La Real are certainly two teams that are playing quite well, really fun to watch. Really happy for Alex Garcia, who came up in the Villarreal system and just got his first call up to the Spanish national team, mm-hmm. playing for Girona, you know.
And is one of the very best midfielders La Liga has to offer now.
Mm-hmm. And he's as I say, it's like we sold him up. He sold him off, and he's, as a youngster, he's developed very well. I sure wish we had him now.
he's the exact kind of midfielder that an aging, you know, center of the pitch, as Villarreal have, you know, aging midfielders that they have. He's exactly the kind of creative mid-20s presence they could use.
Yeah, I think the thing that sort of hurt us with him, and the thing that's kind of been an issue anyway, is, you know, sometimes particular canteras get really good at developing certain styles of players, and I think in our case it's really the creative attacking midfielders. When you look at it, you had Trigueros, who at the time was obviously younger than he is now, but you also had Baena coming up. You had Jeremy coming up. We had a couple other midfielders coming up, and Girona has another guy, Ivan Martin, who came up on our system, and mm-hmm. we sold him to them. I hope there's a buyback clause. I don't know, but you know, we've developed a lot of good attacking midfielders, and we just don't have room to play them all. I mean, no team does.
Yeah.
So I think in some ways you're sort of at that state where you got to a certain point and you say, well, wait a minute, I've got three players for two positions or three players for one position, and you can't hold on to your riches unless you're Chelsea and you loan them out to all over the world, and you know, but we can't do that.
Sign them to 8-year contracts.
Yeah.
As they gave Nico.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I think in some ways we're a victim of numbers there. I think we have not been great historically at developing center backs in our Cantera system. That's one of the things that was special about Pau Torres, mm-hmm. was, you know, not only was he a, you know, native of the town, but he was really a center back that we developed in our system, you know. And when we've brought up players, center backs from the Cantera, generally they haven't done that well. So he was kind of the unique one there. So, you know, it's always easy to look and see what it could have been, but you never know. I mean, you just never do. I think the thing this year is what I want to see with whoever comes in to coach is I just want to see us develop a consistent playing style and have more passion and fitness on the pitch than we've had the first few months.
Yeah, I think that's been the most concerning thing from an outside point of view, watching Villarreal struggle this year, is that what's the playing style? What's the vision? What's the identity? And for, mm-hmm. as you said, for so long, Villarreal had this identity as a team that's going to dominate possession. They're going to bring players through, exciting players through. They're going to attack the ball. I was going to ask you about Jeremy Pino as well. Is he any closer to coming back from that hamstring injury?
Not sure. I don't think we'll see him on Sunday. I would be very surprised, because I think with the international break, they're going to want to
just wait.
Just wait. Yeah, he's.
Might as well.
Yeah, he's Jeremy is kind of he's going to be an interesting the remainder of the season is going to be interesting for him, because he's got a lot of people excited about him. But then he has had some injuries, and he's also sort of faded in and out of matches. And again, partly that has to do with how he's being used and just the general what's going on around him. But, you know, I think he's a player who if he can come back strong in the second half of the season would help us.
Yeah.
Because I think we're going to have to score a bunch of goals because I don't think our defense is going to be that unless we go out in January and spend some money on some center backs. I think we have what we have. If we can get Juan Foyth back, if we can get Pedraza healthy, that'll help us. That'll help us on the. Edges of the defense, but I think we really. I just want to see some sense of what our playing style is. If somebody like Marcelino comes in, the playing style will change, but it's a very definite playing style,
right?
And it can do. There will be some players who benefit from it and others who don't. But I think one thing for sure is you'll know what we're trying to do, even if we don't always do it well.
At least you'll be doing it, right? And it is surprising to see that Villarreal have conceded the third most goals in La Liga behind Granada and Almeria, who are 19th and 20th, respectively. Almeria, at least, appear destined to return to Segunda, having allowed nearly 3 goals a game to this point. That's been surprising how terrible they've been. Like, they weren't great last year, but they picked up enough points at home and had enough solid players, especially in attack. They had enough going forward to stay in the top flight, but their defense is just, this is unsustainable for them.
Yeah. I think this year, the team that surprised me has done better in the bottom half, I guess, than I would have thought is Cadiz. And I think the thing is Cadiz is a little more like Almeria was last year, where their defense is decent enough and they're picking up enough points here and there that they'll probably be okay. But Almeria, they haven't had a lot of luck either, but Almeria looked pretty dreadful and Granada looked pretty dreadful too. So those two seem, unless there's major changes that happen, those two seem pretty destined for the drop to me, but hard to know. We always have, you know, you look at teams that in February that look dead in the water, and there's always one or two that end up getting a new coach bounce or just suddenly gelling and turning things around. So, but those two seems pretty hard. The ones that surprise me, I'm still confused by Celta. Don't understand how they.
I don't understand how Iago Aspas just can't score goals anymore. That's very concerning, I think, for them, because he is still their talisman. They've had some bad luck looking at some of the numbers, but one win from 12. I don't know how safe Rafa Benitez's job really is.
It is, yeah. Well, and they've got some. They've got, you know, they also sold players and didn't really do much with the money. And again, maybe that's, you know, maybe I don't know what their finances are like, but maybe that's part of it. But yeah, it is surprising. Although I will say, Aspas he's pretty good at going after VAR monitors. I was impressed.
I was so happy to see that, and I was convinced he was going to get like a 3 or 4 game suspension, but he gets off scot free. I thought for sure he was going to take one for the team. It's even better that he didn't get punished for that. That was delightful.
It was pretty wild, but Celta is a problem, and Sevilla aren't doing that well either. I mean, I think they're you know, certainly good enough to stay up, but they're not. I expected more from them.
Like, there's confusion for both of us, I think, as to what Villarreal's plan is. I'm even more flummoxed as to what on earth Sevilla are doing, because they win the Europa League under Mendilibar. and they keep him on. They remove the interim tag from him. They keep him on for this season, which implies that they're going to try to build a project with him, except Mendilibar isn't really a project manager. So they take the decision, which is probably the right one, to sack him, bring in Diego Alonso, and they were dreadful against Arsenal in midweek. I think they had one shot on target, one shot attempt for the entire game. Arsenal just choked the life out of them. And they won only twice this year. I think Sevilla shelled out to compete for La Liga in 2021 and 2022 with older players kind of going away from the formula, the scouting strategy that made them so successful. And now they're paying the cost.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think that in a lot of ways, they've had the same problem that we've had, and that you can have play, you know, some players can play the 30 to 35 year period. Some players can, you know, start wearing out at 30, some at 35, a few can go on beyond that. But it's those years between 30 and 35 where there seems to be a lot of variation in how players just can recover from games. And I think what we've seen this year is that, you know, some of our guys who are 35, 36 are really struggling now, where 2 years ago they weren't. And Sevilla seems to have had the same problem, where there's just these older players that just aren't doing it anymore. So, you know, it's strange. They may not even make the Europa League. You know, they may actually finish fourth in their Champions League.
Which is the only saving grace for them annually, is to finish third in the Champions League group and then win the Europa League.
Yeah, and so that's a tough one. It's been years since I've been this perplexed by. I mean, Sevilla's often had slow starts, and some years they've gotten to a certain point in the season and then concentrated on winning the Europa League, but. I'm a little bemused about them, and I think Celta, who I haven't really seen play much yet, but just from what I have seen, they really need some help, and I'm not sure where it's going to come from.
Mallorca is a team that's really disappointed me too. I really liked what they did over the summer, even after selling Lee Kang-in. I thought they did a nice job replenishing around him, and I thought they could make a serious push for a European place. They now sit 17th with one win from 12.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought that they would have been that strong, but I don't think that they have enough to build around. Yeah. Frankly, I think they're. You know, their problem is when you look at their roster, you've got some guys who have been at Mallorca a while, but hardly are household names. And then you're trying to do a lot of filling in, I think, and that's hard. It's hard unless you've got a couple of really good strikers, or you've got a world class goalkeeper, or something, or you can play. You can play defense. You're strong enough defensively, but you can eke out the 1-1 and 1-0 results and stay up. And you know, maybe they can do that, but they haven't really been inspiring.
Yeah, I really liked the Dardair purchase. I'm a big Sergi Dardair fan. Kyle Larin scored a bunch of goals for them at the end of last season. For a pretty reasonable sum, but it just hasn't worked. And Aguirre is kind of like Mendilibar in the sense that he's not a guy you build a project for. He's a fireman, a good one, but he's a fireman.
He's a fireman. Yeah. I have to say that I think it will be interesting to see. What is this? This is the last international break for a while, right? I'm trying to remember.
Thankfully, until March, and then come the Euros.
Yeah, so I think basically what we'll see now, I'm thinking probably there'll be some hiring and firing in March, When these teams, when you're looking at teams that are in the bottom five and thinking, oh, I've got to get out of here.
Yeah.
You know, and hopefully we're not one of them.
I just wonder in that vein, what the bandwidth is going to be for Benitez at Celta, even with his reputation, what the bandwidth is going to be for Aguirre, how long a leash Diego Alonso is going to get at Sevilla, given they've had quite a bit of managerial shakeup in recent years. Alaves seem to be recovering a bit, but they're still down there toward the relegation fight in 14th.
Yeah, it's I don't know. Rafa, to me, I don't know. Celta is just something. It's like with us. There's something not right there.
Yeah,
behind the scenes or something. I'm not sure.
I think it's the president, Mourinho.
Yeah, could be. I mean, when one thing that I had never fully appreciated until Elisa and I walked the Camino de Santiago is how far away Vigo is from everything.
Yeah, it's remote.
You know, and it's like way out there in Galicia. You are, talk about, it's almost like, I mean, it's not quite like Las Palmas, but it's the same kind of deal where you are, it's really... It's you're the only thing in town, I guess. So it's really, you know, great if you're there and the team has massive support in that area, but you know, for the rest of Spain, they just don't pay a lot of attention to them
because it's so far away from everything.
Oh yeah, it's like I think it seems like the only times that I think about Celta are when we play them, and I haven't seen enough of them this year to get a sense. But yeah, evidently the president is a problem, and there's all sorts of, you know, stuff going on there. So
institutionally, it seems bad, and that's never ever a good sign. They've had close calls before with relegation, staying in the top flight. I don't know how much longer they can keep getting away with it.
I almost think if they stay up, it's going to be because either Aspas, you know, drinks the elixir of youth or something. I mean, they've relied on him so much over the years. At some point, it just seems like if your recipe for success for staying in the first division is basically to rely on Aspas to carry you, at some point he's just not going to be able to do it. I mean, he's had great success with them, obviously, and he's been a talismanic player, but they just haven't surrounded him with anybody. And when it feels like they start to, then those players leave.
They get hurt or they get sold.
Yeah. So it's a curious thing. So I don't know. I'll be curious to see when we go into the Christmas break where things stand, and I'll be really curious at the March break, because I think there are going to be some pretty desperate teams at that point, unless they're so far behind that they basically pulled the plug. And, you know, so
well, if there's one thing,
however, I'm sure Atleti is not going to be one of those teams.
I sure hope not. But it is going to be interesting to see how our defense plays over the course of the season. Oblak is not having a great year. I wrote a column on him last week. He statistically has been among the worst keepers in the league again. And we have an old defense. Aspilicueta is 34. Axel Witsel is 34. Stefan Savage is about to be 33, and he's starting to decline. Jose Jimenez is 28, but he has the body of someone who's much older. Mario Hermoso is inconsistent, to say the least. Volatile. Let's call him volatile. Charles Soyuncu has been hurt most of the year, but is one of our few young-ish central defenders.
Yeah. I think a lot of that depends on... Yeah, you're at that stage where experience starts to give way to old.
Just old.
Yeah. And I in some ways, though, I think I think it's maybe a little easier on the if it's easier with the back line, I think, in some ways to deal with players who are that age, because they're not, I don't know that they're getting the same amount of distance traveled in the match as somebody like an attacking midfielder or right. a defensive midfielder. I doubt it. So, you know, but it's also the fact that though with Simeone, he's got a system and he's got a plan and you know where you fit into it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really hard when your body is breaking down and you're not really even sure what you're supposed to be doing. And that's something that I think has happened a bit with a couple of our players, but I don't know. But yeah, I think the defense for you guys is probably going to be the key in terms of where you finish in the league, because I think I've always liked Griezmann. I think he's a great player. Well, I didn't like him at Barcelona, but that's a separate issue.
Neither did I.
but you know, I've always liked him, and I think overall, I wouldn't worry too much about where the goals will come enough if the defense is strong enough.
Yeah, and Griezmann and Morata have been on. It's been a lethal strike partnership this season.
I almost watch it and I think, you know, Morata, maybe he's actually good. This kind of worries me.
This is a sustained period of form from him as I've seen in years, especially as a fixed starter. The last time that he played really this consistently well is when he was a super sub at Real Madrid. And that was years ago.
That's going back a long way.
Yeah.
It's strange. I mean, it's like he's a player everybody likes to make fun of, and it's like, well, what if he's actually good?
Better late than never, you know. Even yeah. as he's 31 yeah. now, it seems like he's taken a real leadership position on the team. The younger Spanish players that we have look up to him. Rodrigo Riquelme got called up to the national team today, which is just wonderful news for him.
That, which is great.
They had an embrace at training on Friday morning. It was really cool to see.
Yeah, cool. What age is Griezmann now?
32. He turns 33 early next year.
Now the way he throws himself into matches, it's like that's pretty impressive. He's still, He picks his spots, but wow, he's still a great player.
There's really no one like him, Alan, is kind of the thing. He played in midfield in midweek against Celtic, and it doesn't really matter where he plays. He's going to track back into defense. He's going to work hard to win the ball. He's not going to insist on finishing moves or playing the final pass to finish moves. He'll play an auxiliary role. He'll head a pass from midfield onto a non-rushing fullback. And start a move that way. He doesn't care really anymore who gets the credit or how the credit is doled out. He really wanted to come back to Atletico and play for Simeone again. And the past two seasons, it's paid off. He's having a weird year this year. He led La Liga in assists last year with 16. He has none so far this year, which is pretty strange. But he's scoring. He's got 11 goals in 15 games.
Yeah. I think you're right that he is one of the. Of course, in modern football, those sorts of players are really valued, because anymore, the old rigid systems are just not used as much anymore. It's all about fluidity on the pitch, and it's like with us, I think our most valuable player is probably Gerrard. He can't do everything that Griezmann can. He certainly is not the guy who can track back in defense, but he has always been great at being able to sense spaces in the attacking half of the pitch, and he can be the provider, he can be the scorer. You know, it's that same kind of thing. You know, it's like, well, where is he playing? Well, he's playing wherever he needs to play. There's not
same way, you know, Griezmann. And
I think he is very unusual, though, in that he's in that he is he can defend as well as attack. Most players can do, even if they're really good at being more of a attacker who can do various things, they're not necessarily great at tracking back. I was thinking about somebody like Samu Chukwueze in that way, because, you know, he's a guy who, if he were playing 20 years ago, I mean, he was like Arjen Robben, right? You would just sort of shuttle him up and down the wing, and he would do no defense. He would just be the lethal guy in the attack. And those sorts of players anymore aren't valued as much.
Yep. It's like when I played basketball in elementary school, I would try so hard defensively, but it just wouldn't happen. So I would do what my coach is called cherry picking. My team would rather defend 4-on-5 than have me defend with them. I would just be hanging out around half court, just waiting for the ball to get to me.
Yeah, that's Chukwueze, of course, couldn't do that because of the offside rule, particularly. Yeah. But you're right. But you're right there. He actually did get better. I think Emery really, really, you know, kind of made him a better defender. But still, he was never somebody that was his forte, you know. But it's like and the other thing is, you know, center backs who, you know, you used to have the center backs who, if they got past the center line, it was like they needed oxygen or something, mm-hmm. you know. And now it's just this thing where because so many teams are pressing and you're playing a high line and your role is much different than it used to be. And that's kind of makes it, it's interesting, but it does mean that there are players who are, the values for certain players are now different than they were 15, 20 years ago because the game has changed.
It's so much more fluid.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's more like watching, basketball with a shot clock as opposed to basketball without a shot clock, where you know, you would get the ball, you would go into the opposition court, and then you would pass the ball around forever. you know, and you could break a team down slowly and that kind of thing. And you had particular players who did particular things, and now it's much more fluid. Anyway, we're getting way off the topic, but it's just so. Anyway, I think, what's your prediction for Sunday? We should make a score prediction, I guess.
Yeah, let's wrap up with the score prediction. I think Villarreal have given us really, they've asked a lot of us in recent years, and I looked at the head-to-head, Alan, and over the past 42 meetings between these two teams, 14 wins, 14 draws, 14 defeats for both of them. Atletico have scored one more goal than Villarreal across those 42 games. I think it's going to be tight, but I will predict a 2-0 Atletico win with a really late second goal.
Okay, there are two ways I can look at this, and one of them is to say, you know, which I hope doesn't happen, is that we're just kind of flat and confused. So I don't want to go there. I'm going to do a variant of what you say, though. I think it's going to be maybe 3-1, but I think your third goal was going to come very late.
I can see that.
I just think that, I think there probably are going to be three goals in it for you guys, and I think we'll probably, I mean, Sorloth, as you said, he always scores against you, so we'll figure he'll score for us.
Yeah, I could see it happening, and Gerard's having, now that he's healthy, he's having another very good season.
I think realistically, the other thing that could happen would be, you know, if everybody really, if things really, the flip side of the, well, what if we aren't motivated and don't play well? What if we really are on top of our game and have some, you know, maybe it's another 2-2. I mean, I think they're going to be four goals in it probably.
Mm. Well, as there have been.
We haven't seen our defense.
Fair. That's fair.
And you're worried about yours, so.
A little bit. I mean, although the Celtic game was great fun to watch, and it was hardly really, after the red card, it was hardly really a challenge. We'll see how much that changes at the weekend.
Yep, yep. Well, yeah, exactly.
Well, all right. I think we will leave it there. Alan, as ever, wonderful to talk to you.
Yeah, great to talk to you. Maybe we'll do a short pod one of these days.
Unlikely.
Unlikely. Well, good luck for the rest of the season, except against us.
Thank you. You as well. And for our listeners, please read VRL USA, our sister site on the SB Nation network of blogs. You can find Atletico content, of course, at Into the Calderon. And subscribe and listen to all our new and archived episodes on Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, to continue listening to the Atletico Madrid podcast network. Until next time, thank you for listening. Adios.